Holiday backs it out on Harris, down to Giannis, guarded by Shamet. Giannis goes to work. They quickly, Holiday driving into the lane, right back to Giannis, slam it!
One of the many Bucks highlights from last night, Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. So we got a game seven there. Bucks, Nets. Dan Devine from The Ringer is going to join us in just a couple seconds here. He actually wrote about this overnight and into the morning. He's calling it the biggest showdown of the NBA playoffs so far, which makes sense. It's a game seven. But talking about how this series is not only going to alter this year's playoff picture, but maybe the course of a couple franchises as well. Because if the Bucks lose and fall short again, who knows what happens there? Mike Budenholzer. Obviously, Giannis is going to be there for the long pull, but they could have some major changes ahead. For the Nets, I don't know how long the three-man experiment is going to go. Mm-hmm. The Harden, Kyrie, KD thing. I don't know how long it's going to last. We don't even know what it really looks like because they barely played together. So that's what's at stake. We'll talk to Dan Devine about that in a second. Before we do that, I need to remind you that the final hour of this program, What We Learns and Ask Us Anything, all the good stuff at 8 o'clock on a Friday is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. To the phone lines we go. Joining us now from The Ringer, NBA columnist Dan Devine here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you guys doing today?
We are good. Thanks for taking the time to do this. I know these are busy times in the association, but we wanted to reach out because we've got a Game 7 between the Bucks and the Nets. We have two Game 6s tonight, which are closeouts for the Hawks. And, of course, for the Clippers. There's a lot at stake there as well, but I want to focus on last night because the article that just went live a short while ago, the biggest showdown of the NBA playoffs is set. What's at stake here, Dan? Because it's more than just the Game 7 and moving on and for this year's NBA title. As you alluded to in the subhead here, or as your editor alluded to in the subhead here, there could be two franchise futures on the line as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's so easy to get, we sort of get wrapped up in the moment, you know, the bit by bit of a series and of the tactical adjustments and everything. But there's a huge broader context for both of these organizations. Like you can say from the Nets perspective that it's not, you know, like Paul George said with the Clippers last year, it's not championship or bust, but you know, they signed Kevin Durant for a 4-year contract a couple years ago. He missed the entire first year of it. The fourth year of both his and Kyrie Irving's contracts are player options. And this is, you know, this is the second year of it. This is the opportunity they have to kind of move forward and, you know, be within striking distance of a championship. And, you know, obviously, as we've seen from James Harden's, injuries, you know, what has taken him out this postseason, Kyrie Irving's injuries, these are so fickle. These opportunities to get to the championship rounds and to be able to have a real, it's within arm's reach. There's no guarantee that that's going to happen again.
Right.
All of those guys know that. They've been in situations before where, you know, with Harden and Durant in Oklahoma City, with the Cavs, with Kyrie and in Boston, like it looks like it's all going to line up and it doesn't necessarily. So seizing this while you have the chance, like this is what Brooklyn has thrown every asset it has into making this a championship team right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is it. You know, if you lose this next game, you're kicking the can down the road and just kind of hoping for better next year. And who knows if that's actually going to come to pass. And then for the Bucks, obviously, you know, their biggest question was, can they get Giannis to stick around long-term? They solved that before the season. They locked that in. But if they lose this game seven, that is a third straight early exit, earlier than hoped for, anticipated exit, and it, you know, puts the spotlight squarely on Mike Budenholzer as the head coach and the sort of architect of what this team can be. Depending on how it all shakes out and, you know, who performs in what ways, like, could raise questions about the all-in deal that they made for Jrue Holiday, who was sensational during the regular season but has struggled a lot in the playoffs. And, you know, what the construction of this roster is going to be moving forward, because now you've got Giannis and Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday all locked up on huge extensions for the next few years. You have a window here, but the question then becomes, who is the person that's going to pry that window open and get you through it? And, you know, do you need to dramatically change the makeup of the roster to make that happen? So there's a lot at stake here in terms of power dynamics in the Eastern Conference, in terms of what the title contention sort of class is going to look like for the next few years. And, oh, by the way, a pretty interesting basketball game on the court, too.
So speaking of that game, what do you think happens in Game 7?
Well, I think the most likely scenario seems like the Bucks, who have had very little success in Brooklyn in this postseason. I mean, they could have won two games in Brooklyn, but they blew both of them, and then they got their doors absolutely blown off in games two. But in game two, rather, I think that this is more the most likely scenario here is two teams with like 6.5 man rosters at this point. The rotations are just absolutely cut to the bone, throwing punches to one another like wearily until Kevin Durant closes the door. I think that's kind of what happens here. I don't know what you're going to get from James Harden. Obviously, he is not James Harden right now, coming back from that hamstring strain. But he was a little better in Game 6 than he was in Game 5, had a little more juice and a little more burst. And if you get a little more from James Harden in Game 7 than you got in Game 6, that could wind up being sort of the determining factor here. So I'm gonna go with the Nets in Game 7. In a game that's probably not going to be quite as beautiful as we would hope, considering how exhausted everybody is. But that's sort of the way Game 7 tend to be, right? People are, you know, sort of grinded down from the series and exhausted, and there's only seven guys playing on each team, and there's a lot of misses, and it's ugly, but they, you know, you got to find the beauty in that.
Who will have more regrets if they don't advance, the Bucks or the Sixers?
Oh man, the Sixers. Listen, the Bucks can always go back on the part where, like, the swing game in this series was one of the greatest players of all time having one of the greatest games of all time. And you know, you can, there will still be sleepless nights, but you can eventually get down to bed at night when that happens. You know, sometimes special just happens to you. The collapse that the consecutive collapses that the Sixers have had here in games 4 and 5. That's going to be really tough to swallow, especially because, you know, not to be Johnny narrative here, but I am a sports writer. the collapses have come in large part due to like the stuff that everybody has known or sort of expected or suspected about this collection of Sixers. Like Ben Simmons can't shoot, and that becomes a problem. Tobias Harris making like $190 million to be your third option just disappears. When it matters the most. Joel Embiid has been everything that you could ask him for, but also there's the constant injury concerns. And then, you know, the second half of game 4, because he's playing injured, he's unable to carry them the way. He's sensational in the first half of game 5, but then runs out of gas in game 5, and then runs out of gas towards the end. And then Doc Rivers, it's like he gets everybody pointed in the same direction until all of a sudden that direction, you know, nosedives and starts going precipitously south into a flaming crash. So like all of the stuff about the Sixers and then all of a sudden, like every time Embiid's off the floor, they're abysmal. Like the same that was true against the Raptors in 2018 or 2019. Like it's been the same thing. So if the Sixers can't beat the Hawks, who have punched above their weight class and who deserve all the credit in the world, like so much of the framing of all this is about how the Sixers have collapsed because, well, the Sixers have collapsed, but the Hawks have made them do it, have helped them along the way. If they can't beat the Hawks and they, you know, with Joel Embiid, with the best player, or maybe the best player in the league this season, even, you know, in his diminished state, and with, you know, multiple, like three max guys and, you know, Doc Rivers and the role players that Daryl Morey brought in and everything else, if they can't beat the Hawks, I think that is a dramatic, dramatic problem in Philadelphia.
We're speaking to Dan Devine, NBA columnist for The Ringer here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. I want to turn our attention to the Los Angeles Clippers. Jason and I have this very weird fetish about teams that have had zero success, largely because our local hockey squadron has never had any.
I was going to say, this might be you guys working through some stuff vicariously.
Yeah, this is
a lot
like
of stuff.
This is like cheap, this is cheap therapy right now. So what we've looked at here is a team that not only has never won an NBA title, not only has never been to an NBA finals, they've never been to a conference final. And they've got now, and you want to talk about weird narratives, Dan, now they've got the chance to go to the first ever conference final without Kawhi and almost doing it in this weird, gutty, underdog kind of way where Paul George rallies the troops in game 5 in Utah. And now they've got a chance to close it out in LA. Again, most likely without Kawhi, unless there's some sort of heroic return. It's been a very interesting playoff for the Clippers, and they can make this even more interesting with this weird twist they've got at the end here.
Absolutely. And I think that to some degree, what you're seeing from the Clippers, like outside the context of the Kawhi injury, and the really like kind of sweet redemption arc for Paul George for game five. I mean, he has, and justifiably so in a lot of contexts, he has taken more flack, we'll call it that, on the radio than just about any other star caliber player in the league the last couple of years, in large part because when it matters most, he has produced least. And then all of a sudden that changes. And then at a time when no one really expected it. And that was kind of neat to see, especially on a day where that was had otherwise been defined by like injuries and sickness and a lot of bad news in the NBA. All of a sudden at the end of the night, Paul George is putting up 37 and 16 or whatever it was. But I think the thing that you're seeing in that series and this postseason run to this point, first with the Mavericks series and then now against the Jazz, is this is kind of why you move on from Doc Rivers to Ty Lue.
Right.
The ability to coach a series, to say, you know, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to, and sometimes it'll look like I'm just throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall, but like, I'm going to get to the lineups and the adjustments and the strategic, the tactical shifts that make the most sense to get us through this series. And I think you saw that even without Kawhi Leonard in game five, like the structure of what the Clippers are right now, where they're saying we're staying small. You know, we lose our best player, our big wing, and we're putting Terrence Mann in the starting lineup, like a 6'4 guard who can shoot and attack off the dribble and be like a havoc wreaker defensively. And we're going to say, we're spreading you out. We believe in the underpinnings of why we made that choice. Like, we're going small. We're putting shooting all over the place and ball handling and defensive sort of steal all over the place and saying, all right, Rudy Gobert, come out into the deep end. And we know you're better at that than you used to be, and we know you're better at that than a lot of people think you are, but I don't think you're going to beat us that way. And then they go out and they win. Yeah. You know, like, it's – the Clippers, it's Lue sort of using what the Clippers have, which is a lot of two-way wings and guards and swingmen capable of defending a few different positions and all like dribbling, passing, and shooting. As basic as that sounds, ask Philadelphia how important it is to have like five guys that can dribble, pass, and shoot at the same time. It's not easy to find always, and it's dramatically important at this time of year, even if they're not necessarily all the superstar players. And so, you know, it's weird to be in a series where you're looking at it and going like, man, it's Marcus Morris and it's Nick Batum and it's Reggie Jackson and it's Terrence Mann and it's whatever. But like, this is why, you know, with remarkably similar ingredients, Doc Rivers sort of looked at that and was like, oh, I don't have the pieces to solve the puzzle. And Ty Lue is like, I think we can find, you know, I can find different ways to solve different puzzles with that lineup. And if he can do it one more time, it's going to be an awfully long offseason in Utah.
I was just going to ask you, we talked about the potential for this being a catastrophic loss for the Bucks and a catastrophic loss for the 76ers. Where does Utah sit on that power ranking? Because they had a chance, no Kawhi, at home, in front of the Jazz faithful in that game five. And quite frankly, I know that Tyronn Lue did a great job of coaching, and I know that Paul George was terrific, but it felt more like a real blown opportunity by the Jazz, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's fair. I think to some degree the issue with the Jazz is just like their whole sort of theory of who they are as a team this year was based on, we don't necessarily, you know, maybe Donovan Mitchell is the like number one, the guy who can beat everybody off the dribble and create everything, and he can be our answer to, you know, Luka and Kawhi and LeBron and whoever else. When you need somebody who can just go get a bucket and create something, he can be our answer to that. But the theory of their team was, we're not going to make him have to do that all the time because we're going to have Mike Conley as another ball handler, another creator. So like, Donovan Mitchell can start the machine going, but then also kick it out so somebody else can get something going. And you add in Bojan Bogdanovic to that. You add in Joe Ingles to that. You add in multiple guys who can, you know, when it's time for like Royce O'Neal to beat the fifth defender on the other team off the dribble and create something, he can do that. So it's you know, Jordan Clarkson into that mix. When you have all these guys who can like aggregate into an elite creator or you know, approximate the value of elite creation all together rather than just having it have to be one guy, that's what really has been the power of their offense all season, the way that they can break down defenses and create drive and kick opportunities for three-pointers. Conley goes out. you know, the and sort of the yeah. other guys on the you know, the Ingleses and the Clarksons and the Bogdanoviches are a little bit diminished in terms of their ability to beat a one-on-one defender, especially a really good one. And all of a sudden, everything's on Mitchell to create in that situation. And then he picks up a knock. You know, he hurts his ankle, and it's pretty clear that he's not quite the same guy as he's been. He's also been very public about that, which I think is, I don't know how much that helps the Jazz at this point, but it's, you know, you got to tell the truth. I don't know. I think it's a big disappointment, but it's also, it shows kind of the difficulty of a team that is like, that is the sum of its parts, kind of,
right.
or intended to be more than the sum of its parts. The difficulty of getting that team to across the finish line when, like, one, you know, one aspect, you know, one cog in that machine kind of starts to wobble a little bit. And I mean, it's certainly possible that, you know, Utah can respond and kind of, you know, buck back and take care of business in game six and you know, get themselves back for game seven with on their home floor. But I think it's going to require probably the best game or the most important game of Donovan Mitchell's career. And then also all of those other pieces being, you know, 5% better than they were in game five to be able to, you know, stall off that the kind of collapse they had in the second half.
Dan, we're right up against it for time, which sucks because I wanted to ask you about 18 different things because the league has just been crazy over the last couple of days, including whatever the hell's going on in Dallas. But chronologically, I'll ask you real quick about the most recent thing. Boston trades Kemba Walker. What happened here? What's going on?
Kemba makes a lot of money and he hurt his hip or leg and hasn't, you know, was not sort of commensurate with that contract. And they've got to figure out what do we do next to build, how do we build the next competitive iteration of this team around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And the only way to do that is to find some extra financial flexibility earlier, as soon as you can. Al Horford is, you know, fits alongside them in the front court, also makes less money the next couple of years and, you know, gives them a path to a little bit more flexibility sooner. So it cost them a draft pick to get off of Kemba's contract, which is, you know, that hurts, especially because you expected him to be such a huge part of their team when they made the deal for him after they signed him after the Kyrie deal. But it didn't work out quite the way they'd hoped for. And now they got to kind of scramble for plan B with, you know, Brad Stevens. It's all really interesting too. Brad Stevens got a real up close and personal look at everything Kemba Walker was going through the last couple of seasons. And the first thing he does when he takes over that front office is trade him. So maybe that tells you where Kemba Walker's health has been at and, you know, what the expectations might be for him moving forward.
Okay. I know that you filed a story at 5 o'clock this morning, so you're probably pretty tired and it's Friday. So with that, we'll let you go. Try and enjoy the rest of the day and the weekend. Enjoy all the games. This should be a really fun 48 hours for basketball. Let's do this again later on down the road.
I'd love it. Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Thank you. That's Dan Devine from the Ringer NBA columnist, who's probably working on about 2.5 hours, 3 hours sleep, if he even went to sleep. Who knows? It's crazy times in the NBA. This is going to be a good next couple of days. I'm excited by all these games. I think that game seven between the Bucks and the Nets, I agree, is not going to be pretty. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be ugly basketball, but so it's a very compelling game.
What's the latest health on everyone?
Harden's playing,
yeah,
but I watched the last game and they did an ISO on where he picked up a steal at half court, and normal Harden would have put his head down and power drove. He would have done a bull rush to the rim because it was one-on-one with the defender, and he held up.
Yeah.
And then they ran it back, and Doris Burke was saying, that's a guy who's conserving himself, knowing, like, if I have a bad hamstring, I shouldn't be sprinting as hard as I can down the
floor.
Seems
limiting for a basketball player.
It is very limiting.
Well, the one thing I can't do is jump.
Right. Jump and run. Are those important? That's trouble. I can't see Kyrie playing, considering he's on crutches and a walking boot, but maybe they – I mean, it's game seven.
Mm-hmm.
Is 10 minutes of hobbled Kyrie going to make a difference? If the answer is yes, then he probably goes.
Chris Tanev would play.
Chris Tanev lent Kyrie Irving his walking boot. He's like, I don't need it anymore, kid. You go take it.
Okay, what we learned, and more importantly, because it's Friday, Ask Us Anythings are coming up. I'm going to throw this out to the listener here. Listeners. It's an unsigned text. Since the $70 million Lotto Max wasn't won, if you won the $70 million, but a caveat is that you have to spend at least $1 million on something stupid, what would it be?
Ooh.
It could be an elaborate prank, a strange business, anything. For example, you could start a sandwich place called Human Subs and say you serve 100% pure human meat just to see who came in. Ah, Moj, good to see you.
Hey.
How are you?
The third time you've been here.
So I'm going to throw that out to the listeners.
I like
if you've got any good ideas. I was trying to rack my brain. I was like, I don't really have anything. I wish I did.
Let's think about it over the break.
It's Alfred and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Don't sweat the technique. Don't sweat the technique.
8:29 on a Friday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Quick reminder that this segment where we do what we learns and ask us anythings, it's brought to you by the fine folks of the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Should we fire up the dot matrix? Yeah, we should. Don't sweat the technique. You have no technique currently.
Why does this always
there?
Okay. So I'm just checking off the reads.
Right. Okay.
He's doing something else.
Just taking care of business. A little TCOB on a Friday. Yeah.
Dom has been completely checked out of this show because we've been watching soccer.
It's over now.
I'm
not checked out
anymore. Welcome
back.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for allowing us a few moments.
If I may.
Dom, can I get some audio? No.
No. Shut up.
If I may, if England was playing during the show, I know you guys would have to talk.
No,
but
No, I wouldn't be here. I would have taken the day off like a sensible person.
I thought about it.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, Matrix is fired up.
Okay, did you think of any answers for the
$1
million? Yeah,
you know what? I did. I had to go digging in the research because I remember there was an NBA player that did this. And I remember thinking, that's the biggest waste of money, but also awesome at the same time.
What was it?
It was Deshaun Stevenson.
Mm-hmm.
He got an ATM put in his house.
That's awesome.
That was awesome. Dude, it's awesome. And he acknowledged, it's like, it's kind of a dumb purchase, but it's cool and nobody else has one.
The fees are killing me.
$450 was the fee.
Oh, so he actually didn't just buy the unit. He just had someone install it there?
He had one installed. It carried a minimum of $20,000 at all time. And it had a $4.50 surcharge. And is when everyone would come over to his house and then they'd go out for the night. All that his buddies that wanted cash, because they'd be going to either the club or a strip club or something, they would use Deshaun Stevenson's ATM for $4.
You know what I think I'd do? I think I'd buy advertising for the Halford and Bruff Show.
Like a gigantic billboard?
No, it would be TV advertising, but it would just be 30 seconds of you just sitting there.
Right. Like the least engaging ad ever.
Hi, yeah. I'm Wilford Bribble.
No. There'd be nothing. It'd be 30 seconds of just Halford
staring into the camera, deadpan.
No, just sitting there.
Not
even in the camera. Just maybe doing some work.
Maybe not even realizing he's on camera.
No, just, that would be it. That would be it. It would be just it. And then right at the end, it would be like Halford and Bruff Show, Sportsnet 650.
We should get more money into advertising for the show.
Yeah, we have approximately $4 into advertising right now on the show.
Remember when you used to fly into the domestic terminal at YVR and it would be Sicaris and Price on that gigantic billboard?
Wait, actually?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't a gigantic billboard.
It was big.
It was big-ish.
It was big.
It was like the welcome to Vancouver. And you'd look at their pictures and you'd be like, how do I get out of here?
Is there a connection to Calgary?
Was it like Sicaris' mug, just like on baggage claim?
It was their headshots with the little TSN logo and the banner underneath
great.
It. And then it said Sicaris and Price on your drive home from work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then the sign looked down on you disapprovingly and judged you for your luggage.
Ask us anything, what's your best dad joke? My favorite one is if someone goes like, I'm cold. Then I'll be like, I'm Jason. Nice to meet you. I think that's the best dad
that
joke.
That's pretty good.
Right? That's a crowd pleaser.
Everyone loves it.
Have you got one? Your father? Do you ever throw in a dad joke?
It's not really I always use that line when someone calls me Mr. Halford. I'll say, please call me Mike. Mr. Halford was my father. I always use that line.
Is that a dad joke, though?
I feel like only dads say it. There's certain lines that you cross the dad threshold.
Right, okay.
Right? And that's kind of one of them.
My personal favorite is when you're about to leave the house and you announce to your father, hey, Dad, I'm just going to go out for a haircut. And
He says, don't get one cut, get them all cut. That's a good one, too. That's a good dad
joke. That is a solid dad joke.
That is a
joke.
Yeah. That's a slap single of a dad joke, you know?
That's excellent.
Yeah.
What is the ultimate dad day?
Oh, good question.
Because it's the Father's Day is on Sunday, and why these questions are starting. Is the ultimate dad day in some ways just leave me alone?
Pretty much. Father's Day actually rarely turns out to be a great dad day because everyone wants to do stuff with you and celebrate
you. That's the thing. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a paradox, right? Like, Dad, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. It's like, I would like to watch golf.
Most dads
quietly would leave the house.
Right. It is like, carve me out a 4-hour window where I can nap and watch. And golf always coincides.
Mm-hmm.
You get, is it Jim Nantz on the call for the U.S. Open? No. Who is it?
No.
And it doesn't matter, but
NBC.
The dulcet tones of whoever's calling it, and you just kind of fade off into this nice afternoon nap. You wake up and the golf is still on. Mm-hmm. They probably progressed closer to the end of the rounds.
Especially
so that,
with it being on the West Coast.
Right.
You get a later ending time, right?
Yeah, you get a nice afternoon nap. You get a solid afternoon nap in.
Yeah.
So that would be a part of a good dad day. Oddly enough, a lot of good dad days coincide with waking up early before everyone else gets up and having that peace and tranquility. You can have your morning dad coffee.
Water the lawn.
Yeah, you can do some stuff. It's not basically the entire concept of a good dad day is eliminating family.
Yeah.
Just get them out of your hair for as long as possible.
While we're
on
the
things you want to do.
Yeah, go on. Yeah. Well,
you're both, you know, your girlfriend has kids. Mm. You're a father.
Uh-huh.
What is the fascination with mowing the lawn and lawn upkeep as a father? Like, why is that a thing?
I have taken over that project at my girlfriend's house, and I have turned a lawn that was riddled with weeds.
It's the greatest rebuild in lawn history.
It is essentially Augusta. And I'm not joking.
That, you know what? Okay, he brings up a good point. That's part of it.
I have spent hundreds of hours fixing this lawn. And partly it's pandemic. Like, it's something to do, right? And I never thought I'd be that guy. But I am that guy. And so I feel bad about this. Someone texted in and said, when was the last time there was a Mount Bruff eruption? And there hasn't been one on the show, but there has been one.
It's true. I know this story.
Some guy who drove a big truck drove over a part of the lawn because he was a stupid truck driver who didn't figure out the turning radius, and he drove over the lawn and left like one of those like double wide things in the lawn. I have never screamed and yelled at someone like that, and I realized halfway through, I'm like, what am I doing? It's just the lawn, but I had spent so long putting effort into the lawn, and then this guy just drove over it. I'm like, so anyway.
And he ruined your work.
So he ruined my work. I was furious. I was so mad. I was unreasonably mad, and this guy's like, this guy is losing his mind at me. And I'm like, yeah, I am.
That story answers your question in part. Because the reason there's the dad lawn correlation, one is golf.
Mm-hmm.
There's a triangle between dad and golf and grass, all of which there's like a love triangle there.
And
because if you love golf, inherently you love grass.
I told my girlfriend, I said, the reason I'm doing this is I want the kids to have a lawn to play on. Like, it had lots of weeds and it just hadn't been taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I remember I had a lawn that I played with when I was a kid and it was great. But now I do not want the kids on the lawn.
There it is. See?
Like, I don't want them even close.
The most stressful time of my day
is when the boy,
no,
well, he doesn't anymore. He goes into the lane. Little boys pee everywhere. Yeah. And he's like, I'm going to help the lawn. And I'm like, you're not helping it. There's just yellow spots now.
Yeah.
The most stressful time of the day is when the boy gets control of the hose.
Mm.
And I'm like, it gets watered.
Are we talking about hoses or hoses?
Hoses.
The water hose.
Water hose.
Yeah. We're off the pee conversation.
Okay. Yeah. And he takes it like the hardest pressure and he ruins the seeded areas.
Upsets the soil.
And I'm just like, can you go inside?
Now, here's the other part of it, what he's talking about. Unlike a lot of gardening and yard projects, lawns have, you almost get an immediate
satisfaction.
There's an immediate satisfaction because you can change and make it look significantly better in a short period of time. You try and garden or grow something, it takes forever. The lawn, you can pretty much fix. How long did it take you to turn the lawn from a bad lawn to a good lawn, would you say? A couple weeks, maybe? Tops? Maybe less? It's not that long of a, you can, if you put some TLC.
What did you say?
How long did it take to turn it from a bad lawn to a good lawn?
Yeah, you don't
did
listen.
You say a couple weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah, how long?
A
yeah,
couple
how long?
Weeks.
How no. long?
Yeah, how long?
It took it's been a year-long project. It oh, takes a long, long time. Yeah. This thing basically had to be like there were parts of it that had to be completely dug up and replanted. And it started a year ago, so there's like the fall project, there's the spring project. You can't really do much over the summer because of watering restrictions. Mm. It's not a couple of weeks.
No, but his
you can
his
fix the lawn in a couple
his,
of weeks.
What he's saying
yeah,
is that the reason why fine. Dads love working on the lawn so much is because you get the immediate satisfaction of looking at the work you've
right.
just
Cut
finished.
Lawn.
And
goes
it looks
from
good.
Like crap to good.
Also, you indirectly answered the question. The reason why you love lawns so much is because you grew up playing on one, mm-hmm. and now you want
no,
to
but I just like
pass
the,
that down to your children.
I like now he I like the look of a good lawn.
Right.
Don Taylor and I would have this conversation, and I actually texted I texted Donnie the other day a video, and my girlfriend had taken a video of me in the backyard just staring at the lawn. Just imagine me. I'm out in the back. I have a glass of wine,
so
and
proud.
I'm just staring at the lawn. So I sent it to Donnie, and I said, Donnie, you'll appreciate this because he's really into his lawn too. Mm-hmm. And he sent back a text that just meant so much, and it said, that lawn looks amazing.
Yeah, nice lawn there, boy. And it was a great moment.
And I nearly
for you.
Cried because no one would say that.
I'm glad that you're so thoroughly invested in this. Can I ask you a lawn adjacent question? Because I've seen a rise in these in our neighborhood. The turf yard, the turf yard. You've seen them, obviously. The turf front,
like AstroTurf.
Or just, you know, like turf. Like people that have decided, I'm not doing grass. I'm
plastic
laying
but
grass.
But turf can also be considered like lawn. So you're
no,
talking,
no, no,
about
I'm talking
fake
about,
turf.
Right. Field turf, sprint turf, the one with the artificial pellets and the blades of plastic grass.
If you have a play area for kids, I think it's a great idea. My buddy put one of those in.
Apparently it's expensive. But I guess you never have to deal with it again.
Yeah, less work. I mean, I don't respect it.
That's kind of what I was getting
Peter
at.
In Cloverdale texts in, you work on the lawn, you go outside to barbecue. It's all to avoid the chaos inside the house.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Then you can make that argument like, I'm out here, you know, fixing up the lawn for you and the kids and keep the kids off the lawn.
That's right. And don't touch the barbecue either.
No eye contact.
This is also all related to owning a pair of Air Monarchs, by the way.
And someone texts in, Bruff should have just bought sod. That's cheating. It's cheating, you know. Like it's cheating. This is there's
okay,
fundamentals of.
I think we've gone too far down the lawn because now we're just getting lawn specific questions at you. Do you want to spend the next few minutes answering?
People are passionate about
Brinsley
this.
Wants to know, Jason. What did you use to kill the buttercups? My lawn is riddled with them.
Oh well, I've got a real clover problem right now. So clover is a massive issue. Yeah, and you know, like I will go out there and like every weed is taken care of.
Okay, we're gonna button up the lawn talk just for a minute here on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks.
You know
lawn.
What? If I had $1 million to waste on a stupid project, I think I'd buy a turf farm.
Yeah, I could see it. I could see you getting deeply into like lawn care.
Yeah.
And writing books. You could be like that English dude that grows the gigantic vegetables. Have you seen him? Gerald Stratford?
Oh, yeah.
Big veg ones. Guy? Yeah, you could be like him. He's like an internet
the
sensation.
Big veg guy.
The big veg guy. That's what he is.
Chuck in Vancouver, ask us anything. Have any of you or a team you've played on ever experienced a 76ers-esque collapse and lost a game? I feel like this segment is all me, but Little League, 1988, Carisdale. I was on a team that took a 5-1 lead into the last inning. And we lost 6-5. Yikes. Our starting pitcher just ran out of gas. He had pitched an absolute gem. And he ran out of gas, and we lost 6-5. And little Jason fouled out to end the game.
Oh, you've told me the fouled out story before, too. Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah.
We had it was the same, baseball. We actually played best of fives back when we were, I can't remember, it was called mosquito baseball back then, I think.
Really?
Age
best
category.
Of fives?
Yeah, and we had a 2-0 lead against the worst team.
2-0 series lead?
2-0 series lead
Ooh,
against the
tough.
Worst team in the entire division. And I, like you, distinctly remember I was the last at bat and they had sewn up the game. It was like 6-1 in this heroic comeback that they staged, and I struck out to end the game. It was great. I love sports. Lots more to get into. We leave a little bit of time, so it's not just a nub. We got a whole final segment to go. Halfenbruff on Sportsnet 650. And I should remind you, as we go to break, this show is presented by the Dallari family of Acura dealers. Three dealerships to serve you better. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, Burrard Acura, 730 Terminal Avenue. Go check them out this weekend. The weather will be great. The showrooms are great. It's the Dallari family of Acura dealers.
Welcome to Kelowna, California. West Coast.
Yeah. Kelowna, baby. Best place in the world right here.
Kelowna.
Hey, 8:47 on a Friday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Jason is now throwing me his phone, and it's the video of. Are you standing on a towel so you don't indent? Oh no, that's a rock. Just looking at his lawn.
How does the lawn look?
It looks great. It does look majestic. There's equal green balance throughout. No dead spots. Excellent edging. Very solid edging. There's a clearly defined line between the lawn and the stone pathway.
Do you edge before or after you mow?
Before.
Yeah. I'm an after guy.
Right.
I do recall
But then you get some of the edging stuff that's...
That's what a leaf blower is for.
Yeah.
Back when I used to work from home...
I don't care for the leaf blower.
Back when we used to work from home and I was like in the house all the time, I remember making... what? You're looking at me.
I thought you guys worked through the pandemic.
No, this was like 10 years ago when
Okay.
Yeah, when we were blogging for a living. And my posture was terrible because I was sitting at a computer for hours and hours. Quasimodo over here. I remember going at painstaking lengths to make the lawn mowing process as adventurous as possible because I just wanted to be outside. So I remember one time doing the cross cuts, trying to get like a waffle type
pattern into
the lawn. It was more difficult than I thought it was going to be. It didn't really take.
You almost need one of those like really expensive mowers too.
Yes, you needed far better equipment than I had. I'm ashamed to admit that I was using an electric plug-in mower.
Right. Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
It's sad. You need a gas mower. I think I should just get a riding mower and just get it over with.
Is your lawn big enough?
No,
for that?
Not even close.
Five by five.
It'd be two passes. And I'd be like, all right, you're going back in the shed.
Yeah. Knocking over fences.
Yeah. Oh, man. I took out an entire shrub.
Halford rolling down 21st Street in his mower just to say he could.
I kind of want one now.
There is a huge segment on Instagram of lawn care.
Yeah, like,
There is lawn care Instagram. Yeah. And being in Vancouver and living in the city, I am constantly jealous of some of the lawns that I see of, you know, the American places in the Midwest or down south where land isn't, you know, $3 million for, what, like 100 square feet
or whatever.
And you get these massive properties where their lawns look like golf courses.
And
half of them are just dads that don't want to go inside.
Speaking of, I watched a video yesterday of them prepping Torrey Pines, the grounds crew. And I used to work at a golf course. I mean, it was a muni, so they didn't really. Guy cut the lawn once a week. He's like, go play. I don't care. But
do you know Torrey's a muni?
Is it?
Torrey's a muni.
Oh, I didn't know.
Torrey is run by the city of San Diego.
The amount of care and dedication that was going
it's
into.
Crazy.
I was just watching the bunker prep. The other thing, too, I was thinking is, if now that we're fully down the lawn rabbit hole here, we should go, because I used to work at Nat Bailey too. I worked for the Vancouver Canadians as an intern for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Watching those guys do the grass, the outfield, because it's got to be pretty well manicured.
Didn't they have to really improve that?
They had to step it up big time because it used to be a gong show.
The Nats field used to be not good.
No, it wasn't good
at
all.
It was awful.
And I was working there.
It was yellow, and like, there were spots. I was like, it looked like the lawn that I just rescued.
Yeah. No, seriously, it was.
We call them rescue lawns.
You can adopt them. The owners of the house think it's weird, but after they get the lawn, they don't really care. The amount of care that it takes to get it right. But also, you bring up a good point. They had to go from, it was like extreme lawn makeover, like the worst lawn, the worst field. And I think it was the worst field on that circuit there for a while. And now it's gorgeous, majestical, magisterial, as Ray Hudson would say.
We just got what we learned here. Canada just got a huge break against Mexico in Azteca. Just confirmed no fans for that game.
Yeah, I saw this.
Is that the World Cup qualifier? Do they have another game there? Like, that's months away, isn't it?
Yeah, they have been sanctioned by FIFA for ongoing homophobic fan chants. Remember we brought it up?
Oh, so it's not COVID related?
No. It's a punishment.
Very interesting.
Their first two World Cup qualifiers. Now, they're saying it's only the first two against Jamaica and Panama. So I don't know. I was under the impression that Canada was one of their first two games at Azteca. So we'll have to do some more digging on that. But remember, we had Vic Montaliani on the show not that long ago, as a matter of fact. And one of the questions I asked him in the aftermath of CONCACAF Nations League was, how did you, as an organization and a federation, go about addressing the Mexican supporters who used homophobic chants during the match?
Right.
And there was a two-pronged approach. They actually had to do an educational component because a lot of the fans had grown up with this term.
Yeah.
I don't even think understanding the widespread connotations. Mm-hmm. And then those that didn't really care. So there was an education part and then a reform part, but I guess this is the next step in that. So Mexico will be without fans in Azteca. We'll try and find out if it's going to affect one of the Canada matches, because that would be a huge, huge development.
They should make them play at sea level.
That too. Just move the game out of Mexico entirely. How high is Azteca?
Well, I think just Mexico City's
right,
high.
But, yeah,
I don't know. Azteca is probably...
Is it on par with like the altitude in Colorado, Denver?
I think so, yeah.
It must be, yeah, right? I mean,
yeah.
And then the bags of urine are also a problem.
7,200 feet.
7,200
right.
feet.
Right. Well, it's also the air in Mexico is not the greatest in the world.
We need to stop Mexico bashing, please.
We're not Mexico bashing. It's just reality.
Mexico shaming.
Yeah. They are the enemy now.
By the way, we've absolutely ruined Ask Us Anything Friday. We spent 20 minutes talking about
the
lawn.
Show.
Lawn. But you know what? We got good feedback on the lawn. Don't finger me. Got to be a better way to say that out loud. Okay. There's two fingers now. Got to be a better way to say that, too. It's been an interesting week. It's been a lot of fun. We do apologize to everyone. Look, listeners, we love the fact that you're engaging with the show and you're sending in text and you want to get them read and you want your questions answered. Sometimes the show just goes the way that it goes, and we will not apologize for that. He's a lawn man now. He's a lawn man. Signing off, I've been Mike Halford. He's been the lawn man, Jason Bruff. He's been Nephew Dom. This has been the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.